This is the Ingles Information Aisle with Leah McGrath, helping you eat healthy, feel great, and understand your nutrition. Now, here's your host, Ingles dietitian Leah McGrath.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to the Ingles Information Aisle. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian. For those of you who shop at an Ingles store, you know that we have a huge selection of gluten-free items, and you can spot them in the store with a really easy-to-see brown gluten-free tags, and they're all over the store, from gluten-free breads and gluten-free crackers and things like gluten-free cereals. They're everywhere. We truly try and do a good job and keeping on top of that, making sure we have a nice selection of gluten-free items. But it's really important to understand who needs a gluten-free diet and why they might need a gluten-free diet. So on the phone with me, joining me all the way from Saskatchewan, Canada, is Shelley Case. And Shelley is a registered dietitian nutritionist. And we're going to be talking about her book, which is called Gluten-Free, The Definitive Resource Guide. Hi, Shelley. How are you?
I'm great, Leah.
So you've been down to Western North Carolina, but it's been a couple of years, right?
It has, and I wish I was there right now because it's minus 40 degrees up here in Canada, having an incredibly cold, cold spell.
Oh, no. Yes, you do wish you. It's cold. It's a cold day here, but I think it's about 40 degrees, of not minus 40, so we are a little bit better off. And Shelley, just to let people know too, I've known you for a number of years now, and you've been a part when we used to do our gluten-free expos. You were a couple of times a speaker at the expo, and you have been a big champion of the gluten-free diet, and also, but not just a gluten-free diet in and of itself, but a science-based approach to a gluten-free diet, who needs it and why people need it. So where did that all come from, Shelley? How did you start becoming so involved with celiac disease and the gluten-free diet?
Well, that's rather interesting, Leah. When I first started working as a dietitian, people with celiac disease ended up in my practice in the outpatient department where I worked at the hospital. And I had not seen any clients with celiac disease, so I was really scrambling to find information. And that was, I've been a dietitian for a long time, so that was pre-Google days and, and all the options that you had, you could just look it up. So I recognized there was a real need for people to have good information about celiac disease and how to follow the gluten-free diet successfully. So that was sort of the birth of the idea that I needed to find more information for my own personal use as well as for my clients that I saw. And so back in about 1999 is when I started researching for about 2 years the gluten-free diet and getting it actually into a book. And my first book came out in 2001, and my fifth one just came out a couple months ago.
That is so exciting. Now, do you follow a gluten-free diet?
Yes, because I also have celiac disease. But at the time that I wrote the book, I didn't realize I had it. I thought was irritable bowel syndrome and migraine headaches and a lot of other symptoms. And it wasn't until one day I was sharing a room with a gluten-free cookbook author, and we were talking about following a diet and why she was on it. And I thought, you know, maybe I should go get checked for celiac. And lo and behold, I had celiac.
How long have you been diagnosed?
Probably about 4 or 5 years now, I think.
I was going to say, I don't know that the first time I met you, you had been diagnosed.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so at all. And I frequently recommend Shelley's book to customers who contact me who are newly diagnosed with celiac disease. I tell them that this is really a good resource for you. Again, it's called the Definitive Resource Guide. It's not, folks, it's not a cookbook, but there are recipes in it. It is really a very comprehensive resource guide. Shelley, why don't we give somebody kind of an overview of what your book has in it?
Well, excuse me, Leah, I've got a bit of a tickle here. It starts out giving you an overview of what the conditions that people that would need to follow the gluten-free diet. So celiac disease, dermatitis herpetiformis, which is the skin form of celiac disease, and non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Because we realize there's people that don't have this autoimmune disease, celiac disease, but they still have symptoms when they consume gluten. So I give an explanation about that, how to get diagnosed and symptoms. Then I get into the details of the gluten-free diet, what foods they can eat, what they need to avoid, what they might need to check. I have a chapter on oats, all the different types of alcohols, frequently questioned ingredients that people wonder about when they're shopping and they see vinegars and maltodextrin and glucose syrup and all of these ingredients that people are wondering about. Then I talk about this, how much gluten, if any, is safe. Then the real meat of the book that is very helpful for not only consumers but dietitians is the whole food labeling component from the FDA, USDA, as well as up here in Canada. What are the regulations for gluten? And then I have a big chapter on how to eat healthy on the focusing on nutrition. And then one of the things that people are area that people struggle with is if you can't have wheat, rye, and barley, which are the three main gluten-containing grains, then what can you have? So I have an extensive section on alternative grains that you can use, what to do with them, and how to incorporate them into the diet, meal planning suggestions for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. When you go shopping, I have a shopping list, how to prevent cross-contamination in your kitchen or when you're eating away from home and out in restaurants and traveling. A big chapter on gluten-free cooking and baking with recipes as well. Over 3,700 gluten-free products by category, a directory about how to find these products and more information about them. A big section on resources, cookbooks and magazines and websites and other helpful resources. And then a lot of other references for people that need to really dig in and get deep about where all this information is found. So it is, as you mentioned, a very comprehensive book. It's 368 pages, jam-packed with a lot of practical and good reference material.
So, folks, again, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking with Shelley Case. Shelley is a registered dietitian nutritionist just like me. She's up in Canada in Saskatchewan, and she really is I consider Shelley to be an expert in celiac disease and the gluten-free diet, and her book is called Gluten-Free, the Definitive Resource Guide. It is really a must-have if you're a dietitian who is going to be working with people with celiac disease who want to follow a gluten-free diet for medical reasons. Also, for anyone newly diagnosed with celiac disease, it is extremely comprehensive with a lot of great fact and science-based information. And we're going to come back to that point because there is so much fear-mongering and misinformation out there about celiac disease, about the gluten-free diet, that I know it can get very overwhelming for people. So I really value Shelley's insight and her expertise in this area and the fact that she's written a book that is accessible to people. You can go to her website, which is shelleycase.com, and you can find the book there. And I'm sure you can buy it right on her website. And I'm sure you can buy it other places like Amazon, Shelley?
Yes.
Okay. And how much does it retail for?
It's $29.95. Okay. And just for people, how to spell my name, it's Shelley Case, C-A-S-E. So ShelleyCase.com.
Okay. So again, folks, ShelleyCase.com. And the book is called Gluten-Free, the Definitive Resource Guide. Shelley's been telling us about all the great components in this book, from resources about gluten-free grains and flours to baking tips, information about cross-contamination or cross-contact, eating out and traveling. Thanks for joining us and stay tuned. Welcome back to the Ingles Information Hour. This is Leah McGrath, your Ingles dietitian. I'm talking with Shelley Case. Shelley is a registered dietitian nutritionist just like me. She's up in Canada and she has written another edition of her gluten-free, the Definitive Resource Guide. And it's a really comprehensive guide to help those who want to follow safely follow a gluten-free diet. So Shelley, you know, so many people, think that they need to follow a gluten-free diet. And, what are some of the symptoms of someone who might have celiac disease, and when should they go and get tested? What are some of the things that you know of that are symptoms?
Excellent question, Leo. Celiac disease is a hereditary autoimmune intestinal disorder that can affect both children and adults. But what makes it so challenging to diagnose people with this disease is that the symptoms are all over the map, and they vary from person to person. I mean, we do have the typical gastrointestinal symptoms where people may have abdominal pain, bloating and gas, heartburn, nauseous. They may have diarrhea or constipation or alternate between the two, which is why sometimes they're told they might have irritable bowel. They may find dairy products, lactose intolerance, have a secondary lactose intolerance. And they could be losing weight, but some people actually do not lose weight when they have celiac disease. Another common symptom for people is that their iron levels are low. They may present with anemia. They can have easy bruising of the skin, bone and joint pain, muscle cramps. They can get this blistering, itchy rash. It's called dermatitis herpetiformis. Migraine headaches, mood swings, depression, canker sores. We see infertility. There's just so many different symptoms for people with celiac disease. And so that's how come it is very challenging for people to get diagnosed. But if they have these symptoms, or they have a family member that's been diagnosed with celiac disease, or an other autoimmune disease such as type 1 diabetes, insulin-dependent diabetes, thyroid disease, these are associated conditions that can occur with celiac disease. So those are the people that should get checked for celiac disease. Now, the first step is asking your family physician to test you using a blood test. There's a screening test called tissue transglutaminase that they can use to see whether you have the antibodies for gluten, and that would be the first step. But the definitive diagnosis is through a small intestinal biopsy. And that's where you fast for 12 hours. They give you some freezing in the back of your throat, and they put what they call an endoscope down into the small and through your stomach into the small intestine. And they take some biopsy samples, and they look under, after they take them out, they look under the microscope to see if these absorptive surfaces in your small intestinal tract, they're called villi. And that's where you absorb all your vitamins and many of your minerals as well. And so they look to see if they've been damaged or flattened, or what we call villus atrophy. So that's what they're looking for to make that definitive diagnosis for celiac disease.
So
one of the challenges, Leah, that I see very common is that people hear about gluten-free and they jump on the gluten-free diet bandwagon. And the problem is, if you've eliminated gluten from your diet for more than a month or so, when you go to get these blood tests and the biopsies test, they may be falsely negative because you have to be consuming gluten for those tests to be positive. So I always caution people, go get checked first before you start on the gluten-free diet.
So, Shelley, you know, one of the things, I ran into somebody the other day, and I forget the scenario, but they were saying that their child or their sister was gluten-free because they had celiac disease. And I immediately said, well, you know, it is a hereditary disease. It's so an autoimmune disease. So have you been checked for celiac disease? And they shook their head like I was crazy. But there's some sort of percentage. Like, isn't it like you have a 30% greater risk?
It's about a 10 to 15%.
Okay.
And it can vary of the first degree relative. So say your sister has celiac disease, that you would be a first degree relative, or a sibling, or your parents. So that they should really be checked for celiac disease, even if they don't have the symptoms. Because it's surprising that when people get checked for celiac, they can have it and not realize it. But then when they get on the gluten-free diet, they realize some of those so-called subtle symptoms that they just sort of brushed off really were the symptoms of celiac disease, and they need to get on the diet. Because if you're consuming gluten, if you're consuming the grains, wheat, rye, and barley, and foods made with those, it can continue to do damage to the small intestinal tract. And what we're concerned about are some of the complications of celiac disease, besides the nutritional deficiencies that can lead to things like anemia and osteoporosis, neurological complications, as well as an increased risk of certain types of cancer. So it's really essential that people get diagnosed in a timely fashion and get on the gluten-free diet and follow it strictly for life so that they can prevent those complications.
So, Shelley, you know, what about a person who says, gosh, you know, I know that anytime if I have a meal that has a lot of gluten-containing foods in it, like a pasta and beer, I just feel awful. And they go and they get tested and they don't test positive for the antibody. And so they say, gosh, but I know I feel bad. So I'm just going to give up gluten. And so are there people out there that don't have celiac disease but are sensitive to gluten?
Yes, we've been studying this for actually a number of years. There was a first reported back in the medical literature back in the late 70s of people being sensitive to gluten that didn't have celiac. So it's, we call this phenomenon non-celiac gluten sensitivity. It's still being widely debated, and we're not sure whether the person's reacting to gluten or some other components in foods, such as what we call these FODMAP carbohydrates, which are a type of carbohydrates that are easily fermentable and can cause bloating and gas and abdominal pain in some people. So that's why it's so critical to work with a registered dietitian who can help you to determine whether you should be looking to see whether it is celiac disease. And if you've ruled that out, then you may have this non-celiac gluten sensitivity, and giving the diet a trial and then going back and doing a gluten challenge to see if that, in fact, is what is bothering you. But so we still have more work to do in the whole area of non-celiac gluten sensitivity, but a lot of the symptoms overlap with celiac disease. So that's why we need to figure out which group you belong to.
Shelley, we're going to come to the end of our segment here. We're going to pick this up on our next segment. Stay tuned to the English Information Hour. Folks, we're talking to Shelley Case, a dietitian, about a gluten-free diet. Welcome back to the Ingles Information Hour. This is Leah, your Ingles dietitian. I'm talking with Shelley Case. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist, just like me. She has a book called Gluten-Free, The Definitive Resource Guide. It's a great overview, just jam-packed with everything that you need to know if you're newly diagnosed with celiac disease, or you have non-celiac gluten sensitivity, or if you're a dietitian or a physician who wants to learn more about helping people who are on a gluten-free diet. So, Shelley, I wanted to tease out, we have been talking in the last segment about how important it is if you have some of these symptoms to get tested for celiac disease first before you go on a gluten-free diet. But in your book, you have so many great tips for people. I wanted to touch on a few of them about maybe we'll start with something like cooking at home. What are some of the big challenges? If you could name two or three big challenges or for people who are adopting a gluten-free diet as far as cooking at home.
Well, one of the things is that most people that I find are often sharing their kitchen with someone else that doesn't have to eat gluten-free. So there'll be gluten-containing foods in the household as well as gluten-free. So it's really important to keep all the gluten-free foods together in their own area of the cupboard or pantry and always store them above. If you have one pantry, at least store the gluten-free products on the top shelves and the gluten-containing ones on the lower shelves so that the crumbs and the flour dust isn't floating into your gluten-free products. Labeling everything, because rice flour and tapioca starch and some of these other gluten-free items look very similar to wheat flour. So it's important, I say, use bright red stickers or some type of a sticker on there to show that it's gluten-free. Having separate containers of things like jams and peanut butters and margarines, because you don't want any or butter. You don't want to do the double dipping where someone with the butters their wheat-based toast and then you come along to do your gluten-free bread or sandwich. So that's why squeeze bottles of condiments like mayonnaise and ketchup and mustard and relish are good, because then you're not doing that double dipping. Also having a separate toaster, and if you can't have a separate toaster, then you can buy these reusable toaster bags where you can put the gluten-free bread in the toaster bag and put it in the same toaster, or you can use a toaster oven, and as long as the rack is washed out. So there's a few ways to prevent sort of that cross-contamination there, but that's really important when you're at home and sharing a kitchen to have really good cross-contamination prevention techniques.
So Shelley, how about it? I know so many people now eat out and they also travel a lot. I can't imagine how challenging that would be when you're talking about how challenging it is in somebody's own home, but how about when people who have celiac disease or who need to follow a gluten-free diet are eating out? How do they maneuver that space?
I can tell you, as someone who has celiac, that is probably my biggest challenge, because I travel a lot, speaking all over North America and also around the world. And so I always have a very large purse. It looks like a mini suitcase, but it is crammed and jammed with gluten-free snack bars and nuts and fruits and things like that. But of course, then when you cross the border, you always have to, you have that issue about bringing things into different countries. So, you know, I have my suitcase often with other things, with me, because if you get stuck in an airport and there's nothing to eat other than a bag of potato chips and maybe a bottle of water, that doesn't cut it for 8 hours or 12 hours.
Sure.
So, you know, taking things with you, researching the places that you're going ahead of time, if it's hotels or restaurants in the city, and checking out some of the different apps and restaurants to find out if they do have gluten-free options. But even if a restaurant says they have gluten-free options, it always is in the delivery, because they can say they have it, but can the back of the house, can the kitchen really deliver that meal safely to you? So I usually suggest when you go to a restaurant is to ask for the manager, or even if you can talk to the chef briefly, and find out, you know, what options are safe, and letting them know that you're not just following this diet because it's the latest fad, which a lot of people are, and so that doesn't give the kitchen the seriousness of needing to do this properly. And I let them know that it's a medical necessity, it's celiac disease, I will get very ill, you know, if you don't do it properly. And so making sure that they're aware of, they can't cook it on the same grill where they've done breaded products, or cooking the gluten-free pasta in the same pasta water with the same colander that they use to drain the wheat-based pasta. So there's a lot of tips that I have in my book about how to eat out safely, or if you're going to a friend's house, calling ahead to find out what they're going to serve and letting them know that maybe you could help out, come early and help out in the kitchen, or bring a dish that you know is safe, so that if you get there and there's nothing you can eat, you at least have something that's safe.
So, Shelley, you know, there is such a big, you know, we've really seen, because I've known you for a while, we've really seen things change on the horizon with the number of gluten-free products that are available. And I guess in many ways this is a good thing for people with celiac disease because they have more options, but it can also present some real challenges, because even though now in the U.S. we have the gluten-free voluntary labeling requirements, there's still some problems with that, right? We have about 2 minutes to talk about this.
Sure. One of the challenges is that gluten-free, I mean, it needs to meet the FDA or the requirements for that being under that 20 parts per million, but, you know, it's trying to find out when you see things like made in a facility that also processes wheat or made on the same equipment, it really doesn't give you a good indication of whether that is a risk or not, because we know products that are made in shared facilities, many companies have excellent quality control processes that they prevent that cross-contamination, where other companies may not put that warning label on there and there might be a greater risk. So it really is challenging, but that's where gluten-free and certification of gluten-free products, when you see a gluten-free certification from some of the organizations like GFCO or GFCP, that gives the consumer an added level of confidence, because that company has had to go through quite a rigorous protocol to receive that certification to make sure it's done safely. But I think the key is that what I try to encourage people is to try to build your diet on naturally gluten-free foods. So, you know, meat, chicken, fish, poultry, eggs, nuts, seeds, legumes, milk and yogurt and cheese and all kinds of naturally gluten-free foods. And then look at, when you're adding gluten-free specialty products, looking for ones that are more nutritious, ones that have some of the gluten-free whole grains in there, or they've been enriched with iron and B vitamins. You know, so comparing your products and looking what's in the ingredients, because many products are made with white rice flour and tapioca and cornstarch, and they're not enriched, so they're low in fiber and iron and B vitamins. So, you know, I think people think because it's gluten-free, it must be healthier, and that's not always the case, and that's why.
So, Shelley, I think that's a great point, that gluten-free is not necessarily healthier. You have so much great information in this book. Folks, go out and make sure if you're wanting to follow a gluten-free diet, get checked first for celiac disease, and then pick up a copy of Shelley's book, Gluten-Free, The Definitive Resource Guide. Shelley, thanks so much for joining us on the Ingles Information Aisle.
Thanks so much, Leah. It was wonderful to talk to you today.